listened to the talk of Florian Grunow about hacking medical devices. Yeah, if you like, please start.
Okay, thank you very much. Hello, everybody. I brought some stuff to play around with me, and actually, I'm every time I bring this device anywhere, I'm grateful that I arrive and the device arrive in a safe way, because when you're going through customs with these devices, it's always you get questions asked, and your laptop is like checked for explosives and everything like that. And I additionally, I tend to forget that I have all these nice little toys with me, face dancers, Arduinos, Raspberry Pis, and the combination of plenty of cables, medical devices that have possibly APT in it, and the hacker tools most of the times tend to be a little bit stressful. But I made it here, so traveling from Germany to Austria is not that hard. When I was traveling to the US with the device, it was harder, as you can imagine. But anyways, I'm here now. I'm great to see you. Great to see so many people. That's nice. I'm going to talk about the security or the insecurity of medical devices today. I just been to the Medica in Düsseldorf, which is a really, really great big conference where all the guys that build these devices gather and show what they show off, what they have. Show new devices that they build, and it's very, very interesting that most of the vendors tend to implement networking capabilities, and you actually see that some of the vendors that don't know what to do with the network stack in their device just implement the network stack and then leave it there. So that was something that I could see all over the place, that when you're going to the guys and ask, oh, you got a nice patient monitor there, I see that it has Ethernet at the back, so what do you do with the Ethernet? What do you do with the LAN? And most of the times you get the reply, oh, well, the LAN was implemented on the board, we took the board, so it's there, we don't use it actually. And this pretty much sums up how these guys think about communication in their devices and how they use this. My name is Florian Grunow, as said. I'm a security analyst for ER&W in Heidelberg. Most of the times I do pen testing. I'm in a team that is dealing with application security, and I have a research project which deals obviously with medical devices. And I have a little bit of medical background. I've done my bachelor in medical computer sciences, and so pen testing and medical devices with COM enabled is really, really fun, as you will see, I hope. And what am I going to talk about today? First of all, I'm going to talk about the motivation that is behind this research project. Started the project, I think, half a year ago, something like that. And it turns out that the project... Sorry, I have a problem with my presentation here. Give me just a second. Okay, I'm back. And it turns out that this field, this area of IT security is really, really interesting, because you're dealing with not only the classical approach of how do you disclose that stuff, how do you do that stuff, but you really have to think, carefully think, how are you going to do this kind of stuff in public, okay? So we have research that we can't publish now because vendors take very, very long to implement. And I'm not going into the discussion of responsible disclosure and full disclosure here, because in my sense, full disclosure is no option in this area, because we are really dealing with stuff that actually can harm a patient's life. So there is no option on putting pressure onto vendors. I'm going to talk about publications that are done before. You all might have heard the findings of Barnaby Jack, who passed away this year, who found out critical stuff in implantable cardiac defibrillators and insulin pumps. There's other stuff around I'm going to talk about in a bit. I'm going to state you the problem, because we are not dealing with the default problems that we have in IT security when we find stuff or when we want to find stuff. I'm going to show you a few targets that we looked at. One target is standing here. And I'm going to disclose some of the findings that we have made so far. And at the end, there will be, I hope so, there will be time for questions. Okay. Short disclaimer, all products that you see, blah, 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 trademarks, property of the respective owners, because I'm going to show you a few devices, and they have all brands, branding on them, and we are not associated with them, and they are the respective owner of the devices. Okay, let's start with the motivation. We have one core slogan when it comes to IT security at ER&W, and that is make the world a safer place. And I think that the slogan could not fit better in here than when we're dealing with medical devices. The motivation behind looking into the security or insecurity of medical devices comes mainly out of its importance, because we trust these devices. If you're going to a hospital and if you are really, really sick and the doctor attaches a system to you, to your body, then you will not start thinking about, is this device secure? Is it hooked up to a network? Is it patched? Blah, 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 whatever. Yeah. Even I don't do that. So if I would go to a hospital, I bet I would not think about if the anesthetic device is hooked up to a network and is it secure or is it not secure? Okay, maybe I would, but I think it's okay to not think about that kind of stuff in that moment, because you're in a critical situation and there are other priorities than thinking about security of devices. Doctors trust these devices, obviously, too. Every doctor who's using a device is making decisions, life-saving decisions, that depend on the data that is shown on those devices. And these two aspects are the most important aspects why we should look at these devices, why we should look at the critical infrastructure that is behind these devices. Because when we're talking about critical infrastructure, we always think about something like, oh, can they put an explosion into our Kraftwerk plant, power plant? Can they or can't? So the problem is that when it comes to medical devices, these questions are really about, is there a patient hooked up to a device and can I harm the patient directly? So the devices, the security of these devices has a direct impact on your health. The other nice aspect is that these devices, well, not this device, but most of medical devices are really, really rocket science. Okay, think about the CTs, think about MRIs, the technology behind that, everything, the communication systems that are used are really, really rocket science. This is really, really cool stuff to deal with, and I would love to get my hands on an MRI. I have not gotten to the point where a hospital would let me play with a $2-3 million device. Obviously, it's kind of hard to test. They use proprietary protocols, which is fun all the time, because especially when you're looking at patient monitoring systems and you're looking at the protocols, the proprietary protocols they are using, then you will recognize who stole from who. Okay, so you see, okay, so I see this exact delimiter for the data is used in three different other protocols, and this is really, really cool to look in those devices. And every device is different, though. Okay, so dealing with a patient monitor, you have to think of different attack scenarios when it comes to harming a patient than when you're dealing with a pumping system, for example, or an anesthesiologist's device or something like that. Publications, what has been done so far? Very, very interesting is that the FDA, which is the Food and Drug Administration, which is kind of the certification central point in the US for certificating medical devices, put out a recommendation which says that the FDA is recommending that medical device manufacturers, blah, 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 assure appropriate safeguards are in place to reduce the risk of failure due to a cyber attack. So we are living in the year 2013, and we're dealing with critical infrastructure. And there has to be an administration or a certification authority that tells the vendors to do something about security. I couldn't believe that. And this basically sums up and shows how IT security is being dealt with in the field of medical devices. Okay, we have Barnaby Jack, who did a lot of research on medical devices, who managed to influence insulin pump to completely dispense the whole dose on a patient over a wireless interface, I guess it was. We have medical alerts that are put out by researchers who found that they who found in a study that 300 medical devices have from 40 different vendors have hard-coded passwords set, maintenance passwords set, which means that if you know the maintenance password, you can do anything with the device that you want to do. We have more research on implantable cardiac defibrillators, the little things that are implanted under your skin and trigger your heart again if it comes to a rest, for example. So we have studies there which in which they disclosed how they dealt with it, on what frequency the station and the defibrillator are communicating on, and how the communication protocol was set up. So there is research going on, and it turns out that some of the vendors, they can't keep up. They have a problem keeping up with the research that is coming in, the pressure that is applied on them, and I think this is good because they have to deal with it. So the problem. This is the device I bought off of eBay. It cost me, I think, 20 euro. And it is an ECG, which means it measures the signal transduction on your heart. Okay, and it is from the 80s. So this is an oscilloscope on the left, a real oscilloscope. I mean, like a dot that is floating around. And you have this little screen on the right, which shows the pulse rate. Okay, so your heart beats with a pulse rate, and you can see that pulse rate extrapolated from the ECG here. And this is an actual needle that is moving and showing you the pulse rate. So this is how we built medical devices in the 80s. This is me standing in front of an EEG. An EEG is a device that measures your brain waves. You get hooked up to the device. It weighs about 200 kilos, I think, the device. It has needles, also needles that actually print the EEG lines on paper with ink. And this device was used, it's also from the 80s, was used in a major, major hospital in Germany until, like, I think 4 years or something, okay? So hospitals are really using their stuff until it falls apart. And then they buy the new stuff. And I would say that if a hospital is now getting rid of old stuff and buying new stuff, they can't go around devices that have communication ports built in, okay? The vendors tend to go to implementing maintenance port they are using. They are using maintenance port that are always on, so the device manufacturer can always monitor the device and see if, like, the temperature is too high or whatever. So this is where we're going right now. So hospitals have a real problem going from this, I mean hospitals in sense of the IT, the IT that is behind the hospital, going from these devices to devices that have always on communication ports to the internet or wherever, okay? So this is a big problem. So why are they doing this? And why are the vendors proposing medical devices that have communication ports? Mainly because it has to do with optimization of processes. So imagine you got a ICU, an intensive care unit, where you have 6 beds. And to monitor those critical patients, you might have to have 6 nurses that are on the bed and monitor the alarm. Nowadays, this is not a scenario. No hospital would do that like this. They have one central station where you have one monitor with the vital signs of 6 of these monitors. And if an alarm pops up, if an alarm goes up, the nurse can go to the bed and see what's happening there. Okay, so some kind of remote control. If this optimization process is good or bad, I will leave that to yourself. these new communication options lower the cost for hospitals, especially in Germany. There's much pressure on hospitals. Hospitals have to deal with how they are investing into infrastructure, how they are investing into personnel. And if you can get rid of two or three nurses, then this might be a good decision for a hospital when the device is communicating over a network and doing the stuff on its own. Which is especially true in intensive care units because they are, as the name says, very intensive when it comes to making things work there. Interoperability is an aspect too. I don't want to go into details there. All the devices communicate over different protocols. You got interfaces all over the place. You got some of them are standardized, some are not. Devices tend to talk XML, they are shifting XML files over the network, giant XML files with patient data. And as the complexity of the protocols increases, you can imagine that the attack surface of the devices increases too. So these are devices that are used in a hospital right now. They are standing on cold standby, which means that these are anesthetic devices, which means that you have the lower part, which is connected, hooked up to the patient, and which gives the patient oxygen during an operation. And you have devices on top of these towers, I'll call it. And these are the monitoring. This is the monitoring stuff that I have here. So this is one of the devices you could use on top of one of these things. These things, I guess they are 15 to 20 years old, something like that. And all of these devices, the monitoring systems and the device below, all have network capabilities right there. In this hospital, it's very interesting that they didn't dare to connect the devices to the network. So they have all this fancy network connectivity and they just don't connect it because they don't know how to deal with it. Will it harm our network? Will the network harm the devices? They have no know-how, certainly, on how to deal with this. So are we ready in terms of, is IT in hospitals ready for this new stuff that is coming onto the market? In German hospitals, we have a lack of resources in every place, not only in IT, not only considering the medical day-in, day-out jobs, which is not good, obviously, because if you're dealing with IT security, then you have to invest, and investment is always bad. You have different types of networks, so considering the lack of resources and the complication with different types of networks, you have a network for the doctors, where you don't want the patients to get in. You have a network for the patients where you don't want the doctor to get in and don't want the patients to get out because they connect their Xbox 360 when they're on the station and play. You got a network for the devices. You got a network for guests that are coming and visiting, and you might have a research net when you are a university or hospital. So you have to deal with all these networks and have to make sure that all the data that is passing through it is going in a secure way. All these semi-new technologies that are coming now in those devices, I call it semi now because they are not new. It's LAN, it's Ethernet, okay? And it's TCP/IP and UDP, and there are some protocols on it. That's not rocket science, and that is not new. But for hospitals, this might be new because, as I said, imagine that you are IT in a hospital and somebody comes up to you and says, okay, we have this EEG from the 80s, we will get rid of it, and this is the new EEG we bought, and it has network capability, and I want to see in my room how the patient is, and please make this work. Okay, so this is completely new for IT in hospitals. And we have the aspect of remote maintenance, which is a problem too, because vendors really, really tend to push out the devices, hook them up to the network, and then connect from remote to every device and see if everything plays out well. Especially the higher class vendors do this nowadays. I think that you can't even buy one of the new devices without this option. This is non-optional. Are we ready in terms of, are you as patients ready? What about home monitoring? Think about home monitoring, ambient assisted living, stuff like that. Devices that we get from our doctors, ECGs that we carry around all the time to monitor 24/7 our heart rate, stuff like that connects to the internet, uses your internet connection, uploads data. There are ICDs, implantable cardiac defibrillators, that have a base station that is connected to your wireless network. And the doctor can view the data of the ICD, and the ICD is sending wirelessly data to the space station, to the doctor. And this opens up scenarios that are really, really frightening in my idea. So one major aspect is, and we see this with Wi-Fi, okay? So Wi-Fi has to integrate flawlessly. My mother doesn't want to set up a 42-char WPA2 key. Yeah? She just wants to let the device there, stand there, push a button, and everything's fine. And this will be the same, I think, with devices that are used for personal health. They have to be usable, and they have to be usable for old people, okay? Yeah. So what about the vendors? My impression is that vendors do the same mistakes again that we all go through all over the time a new technology arises. Okay, think about Wi-Fi. We had gone through the pain of Wi-Fi, of having a decent Wi-Fi encryption. It took us 15 years nearly to get a encryption that really, really seems to work right now. Think about car keys. When the first wireless car keys came up, replay attacks were all over the place. Vendors had to patch. Vendors had to think about new stuff. And this dealing with medical devices and security is a bit, to me, like exploiting stuff like in the old days, okay? You have all those stuff like unencrypted communication. You have ports open with admin interfaces, listening with no passwords and stuff like that all over the place. And I said that the vendors are not really sensible about that kind of stuff. They implement stuff that they are not using, even if it has network capability or whatever. They might use it later, and then they will think about the security of the devices. I got hands on a device of a vendor that wanted the patient monitor in the operation room to be visible via a web browser in the doctor's office. So imagine a patient monitor with a web server listening for incoming requests. So we got all this kind of nice web exploitation stuff coming again and again. They are dealing with it because they are having two network interfaces into the machine. One is trusted, one is not trusted. It's running an embedded Windows XP. So I guess that when you're owning something over the untrusted network, which might happen, you will never have a chance to get into the trusted network, I bet. Yeah? So there might this is really, really good to have physically two network interfaces that are on the same box, basically. Okay. When we're talking about compliance, when you build a device, you need to be compliant in some kind of way. In Germany, we have the Medizinproduktegesetz. The FDA pulls out certification processes as well. In Europe, we have some guidelines that we have to follow. And what is really, really interesting is that all these guidelines, everything that you need to do to put out a device onto the market, focus on safety and not on security, which is, in the first place, okay, because if I get hooked up to this device, I want it to be safe first. I don't want to get electric shocks. I don't want something to happen what should not happen. But the thing is that when you talk to vendors about safety and security, they don't even know what safety is and what security is. So if you go up to the vendor and say, okay, we need to talk about the security of your device, they all think like, yeah, well, that's no problem. We have like the circuits board, they are separated and nothing can happen to the patient. And this is especially a problem in Germany or in Austria because we don't have the word security and safety. So if we are communicating via the word Sicherheit. There might be the word Datensicherheit, okay, so you could distinguish that, but who does that, okay? If I go up to a guy and say, like, we're going to talk about Sicherheit now, then nobody knows, is it safety, is it security, is it both, what are you talking about? And the medical device vendors tend to focus on safety totally. Safety mostly works, though, to say something good, but they still have bugs like, the device is showing an asystole alarm even if the patient is fine. An asystole is like a flat line, which means that your heart stopped beating, okay? So there are high-end patient monitors out there that are stuffed with features, stuffed full of features that have bugs like the alarm suddenly goes off and tells like the patient is dead, okay? So, and this is kind of scary because you see that even in the safety aspect, they can't control the features that they implement. Okay, so more features means more attack surface, and that means more attack surface for safety and security. In Germany, if you want to put out a software that is used in a medical device or in a hospital, then basically what you need to do to prove that the software is secure is you need to have a proper authorization mechanism. Okay, so you need to make sure that the nurse is not in guard mode and that the doctor is, and that's it, basically, okay? So if you talk to the vendors, okay, what do you do to implement security in your software? Authorization, that's it, because there are hackers out there, and if there are hackers out there, a hacker will anytime find a way into the system, so there is no chance to make it secure. In the US, when you need to put out a device, you need to fill out a form, and in this form you need to state what the device does and if there are devices out there that are similar, which shortens the process of getting a device out into the market. And one of these forms is called 510K, and most of the vendors, when they push out a product on the market, they say that our 510K assumes that there is no hostile environment, the doctor will not harm the patient, and the patient will not harm the doctor or himself. Bam, that's it. There are no security considerations that Florian might come into the hospital and harm the doctor. So there is no hostile environment. Everything's fine. The world is a happy place. And certification also does not focus on security or has no focus on security, but on safety. Okay, so I will do up a little summary here. We have little resources on the customer side. The customer is the hospital. We have little experience with incidents because this technology is new for the vendors and for the hospitals. So we even don't know how they react. So if I go up to somebody and tell them, okay, there is a remote root exploit on your device, I found it, I can manipulate the data on it, and I can show whatever I want, then it depends on how are they going to react. Do they have a process for this even? I mean, if they can't distinguish between safety and security, do they have a security process, a patch process for putting out patches? They even can't possibly patch, because if I buy this device and put it up into my hospital and it stands there and I disconnect it from the wireless and disconnect it from the LAN, how am I going to reach my customer? How am I going to reach my customer and tell him, hey, there's a security vulnerability in there, probably every month, and tell him we need to patch again. This is not feasible, okay? So it's really, really difficult to apply patches in a hospital. And we have this safety versus security. We don't speak the same language. So we security researchers do not speak the same language as the vendors do. And this could probably kill you. Okay, we're going into some of the targets that we will be looking at, and this is something for you too. So if you are going out, if you're paying your doctor a visit and you see that he has some devices with network connectivity, just leave the room with it, or let the doctor get out and get your hands on it, because it's really, really important, I think, that we as the research community, as the hacker community, go on these devices, put our hands on these devices, and show that where the problems are. Because we are not talking about critical infrastructure that costs a lot, we're talking about critical infrastructure that could cost lives, okay? So, obviously, we are looking at devices with enabled communication, and enabled communication is all over the place. I have seen prosthetic limbs that have Bluetooth enabled. I don't know why, but they are putting prosthetic limbs out there that you can, you can't control them with your iPad, but you can see if the settings of the prosthetic limb is still in place and everything works out fine, so you can fine tune. Okay, so nobody would suspect communication in there. You could do a severity rating if you wanted to. You could say that devices with a low impact are devices that are just monitoring stuff, which is critical enough because when you're monitoring stuff, your decisions will depend on the data that you are monitoring, right? Medium would be diagnostic systems like MRIs or X-ray machines or something like that. A misconfiguration of an X-ray machine may harm the patient too, and a misconfiguration of an MRI may cost the hospital $3, $4, $5 million, because if this device fails and needs to be replaced, then this is really, really expensive. And the category with the highest severity rating would be anything that has feedback to a patient. Think about medical pumping systems. Think about ICDs, implantable cardiac defibrillators. Think about anesthesia machines and stuff like that. So in the monitoring world, we have stuff like this. Basically, all these machines can do the same as this machine here. This is a little bit cheaper, though. As these machines, so you can buy a patient monitor from $750 up to $30,000. So this is the range that you can have. And you can imagine that the features increase with the price. You have diagnostic systems like this, MRI on the left, an X-ray machine on the right. Even the old MRIs are communicating over the network because they are pushing their images into a central server, where the doctor can view the data on his workstation. Okay, so if you're getting put in here, the pictures will be transmitted over SMB possibly to a network share, and on this network share, which is the simplest case, and on the network share, the doctor has the possibility to view the data. So even old MRIs, CTs, whatever, have networking capabilities. And then we have everything that has feedback to a patient, implantable cardiac defibrillators like these. They have the new ones have two different kind of communication protocols. One is inductive, which means that you have to put the programmer onto the patient, and via a mechanism similar to RFID, the programmer and the device can communicate. But you can enable an additional communication port on these devices, which has a range of 10, 15, 20 meters, and which is capable of transmitting data to. Then you have the anesthesiologist device and medical pumping systems like this. If you're on an intensive care unit and you need to get medication, like 4, 5, 6 different medications, then something like this will be hooked up to your bed and will be attached to you. And this is also controllable over the network, okay? What could possibly go wrong? Okay, targets. It's very, very hard. If you plan to start doing something like this, it's very, very hard to get your hands on these devices because either they are really, really expensive or you are not allowed to operate them. I am not allowed to have an X-ray machine in my basement, okay? And I could not convince my boss to have an MRI scanner in our basement at the office. So this is a problem. You need to focus. First of all, to start with something you can get your hands on. There's a nice website I can recommend. I'm not affiliated with it. Medwow.com, I think it is. And you can buy everything there. You can buy mobile MRIs. So you get like a truck, and in this truck is a mobile MRI. I think it costs about $1 million. So you can get everything on there. Everything used, still functional. Okay, they are expensive. Vendors have little interest to cooperate, so most of the times we are going to the vendors and telling them, okay, you're going to put up a new device, we know that, it has communication ports, don't you want to let us take a look at it, and we tell you if we think that it's okay to use it in a network or not. They most of the times block or are not interested. What is interesting is that vendors that do had an issue, like a patient has been harmed by an exploding patient monitor, something like that, then they are interested. So you see that there is no sensibilization in this field, okay? So vendors, we are going to the same pain all over again. We need to go through the pain. The vendors have to go through the pain of losing something, of breaking something, to make them see that they have to invest in security. And if you're going into corporations like we do, we're going into corporations with hospitals because they want to know if their devices are secure or not, then you have to deal with liability, okay? So if I crash the MRI and it doesn't come up, who is going to pay for it, all right? So this is are interesting questions that you have to answer before you start hacking on those devices. So they are hard to test. Okay, I'm going through three case studies, short case studies that we have done on devices where we had our hands on. The first example is to give you an impression how networking capabilities are used in this field, in the low-cost field of EEGs. This example. An EEG measures brain waves, as I told you, and this case this product is used in small and medium-sized medical offices. It's basically a gray box, and it has a computer, a normal workstation with the software on it. And both of them are hooked up over LAN, and they communicate over UDP. So the software is sending UDP packets to control the box, and the box is sending the data back via a UDP stream too. Okay? So there is no authentication, no encryption, no security implemented whatsoever. They just throw UDP packets at each other and hope that they arrive. And this is all they do. So if you reverse engineer the protocol that is used, you have full control of the gray box. I'm going to show you a small video, I hope. Yeah, there we go. So this is the box. These things up here obfuscate the vendor name. And what you see is these are the buttons for the electrodes. So the electrodes get hooked up to your head and then go into the box. The box is connected via a network to the workstation. And what you see up here are LEDs that show the doctor which kind of setting they actually have on the EEG. So you can hook up the patient and say, like, okay, I want to have this electrode and this electrode, or I want to have this electrode and this electrode, and this depends on what the doctor is going to measure, okay? So what the diagnosis would be. So this shows how the setting is made. Okay, so this is the device. Then you see that this is the software to it. You see that this is raw data because no patient is hooked up, and what you see is the same thing up here in the right that you saw on the box, which means that if I would take a setting that connects like the outer electrodes with each other, then I would see a yellow thing here and it will be connected. What I do now is so I'm sending packets, the device is sending packets over the network and the control station is sending packets over the network too. So what I do is simply sending packets by myself now. And we are going back to the software. You see that the software is not responding. You see that there are no connections made here. It's still the same thing. Data is coming from the device. Nothing happens. The doctor seems everything is fine. And what you see on the device is that I have full control over the LEDs, and I can hard tell the LEDs what to do and what not to do. So this might not be a problem at first glance, okay? Because you're not really harming the patient with that. What you could do is that you could connect electrodes different than the doctor used to configure them, which might lead to different results, which might lead to a diagnosis that will get you into a hospital or whatever. But this is not something that is really, really painful or something like that. You can even build EEGs on your own. This is just a short break I will do. There is a crazy project, OpenEEG. It's called OpenEEG. It's under the GPL. You can build your own EEG. We did that. You see the box with the red button there, and you can hook up a patient, and this patient is able to play games via brainwaves on a computer. So this is also some kind of nice side effect when you're dealing with computers and with medical stuff. So take a look at that project. It's really worth a shot. Okay, we're coming to the next two parts. I will not tell you any details on how I do the stuff I'm going to do on this device right here, okay? And I'm not going to tell you who the vendor is. That is because the disclosure process is still a process. We have not gotten to the point where the vendor says, yay, thank you, everything's fine. And as we might be able to harm patients with that, I'm not going to disclose any details. Sorry, there will not be any GitHub tools or whatever. Okay, patient monitors, widely used in hospitals, intensive care units, during an operation. I think you might have gotten the point how to use them. They monitor critical vital signs like the oxygen saturation in your blood, ECG, blood pressure, blah, blah, blah. What I brought you is the measurement of the oxygen level in my blood. Normally, I would hook up someone from the audience, but you're too far away, so you're lucky. So I have to hook up myself. And you should see that there are some waves on it. Okay. So this is the normal configuration of a patient monitor. So the first thing I want to show you is it's just a picture, and it's a picture of a device that we managed to reconfigure. We managed to reconfigure the alarm boundaries of the device, which is a total fail if you can manipulate the alarm boundaries over the network, because you can basically tell the device, okay, let's say like pulse rate. Let's take pulse rate, okay? If your pulse rate is zero, then the heart's not beating, and obviously you're dead, okay? Simple. So what would happen if we could manage to set alarm boundaries for the pulse rate that are so far away from anything that works that an alarm would never be triggered? So we made this. We put up a configuration for the pulse rate with a 30,000, more than 30,000, and which goes up minus 30,000. Okay, and if you die with this machine hooked up, nobody will recognize, okay? So this will just go on and tell everything's fine, get along, nothing to see, everything's fine, okay? We have more on this device. We can basically also nuke it out of the network, which is also not good if you're hooked up and you're like a doctor in the middle of a resuscitation and you're looking at the device and it just reboots because somebody's sending a magic packet over the network. This can't be good also, okay? Okay. So this is the first device we've looked at. This is some kind of high-class vendor, okay? So this is nothing cheap. And it's the picture is intentionally like this, so you cannot, I hope that you cannot find out who it is. Okay, target two, standing in front of you. This is the second patient monitor that we're looking at. It has two central elements, it has two arm boards. I'm going to skip a little bit because I'm not good in time. You see two arm boards on there. One is for the signal processing on the left side, and one is basically the front end on the right side in the machine. Okay. So, first of all, I am going to start a software. And this software is able to display in real time the data from this device. Okay, so I'm hooked up with my laptop with this device over the network. If I connect myself, then I should see something red going on in the lower part of the screen. Come on, okay. So this is basically my pulse, which is quite high, and my oxygen saturation, which is 97. Okay, so we have, this is the classic setup. We have a central station. We can monitor the device. The device is displaying data. What would we do if we would, if we are a three-letter secret agency and want to kill the patient and nobody to recognize at night? What is the first thing? Replay attack. Okay, so we want to kill the patient and actually have live data on the central monitoring station so everything's fine. Okay, we need to get into the middle of this device and the central monitoring station. So this is a live feed from the webcam you see here. First of all, I'm going to, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to hook myself up so that you see that the device is displaying something. Come on, come on, come on, faster. Okay, I'm there. So I'm nuking the device off the network. So you see it's not moving anymore, right? Okay? So I'm playing a classic denial of service on the device. So now it gets complicated because I have this finger here and I have to use, okay? And you see that here is no data coming, right? We had some data coming live in there. No data anymore. The box is pretty much broken right now. And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to fake data in the central station, which has nothing to do with anything that is happening here. So I can put, I'm dead now. This is the point where I'm dead. And you are sitting at the central station and see that the monitor still is connected. And I even got more data than before, okay? So somebody hooked up the patient. Okay, so I can stop my denial of service and the device comes back to life. It's there. It shows the flat line. The patient is dead now. Going back to the central station, patient's still alive. Everything's fine. Okay, so this is the one part. The second part is I don't want to manipulate only the central station. I also want to manipulate the data that is on here. Okay, so I want to come back to me again. I think I'm over time, but I'm doing, oh no, I'm not. Perfect. Time, 2 minutes, plenty. Okay, so I'm hooked up here, data is fine, everything's fine, I'm alive, and what I'm going to do now is I'm failing hard on the last demo. Okay, so I'm going to do this manually. Okay, so the first thing I'm going to do is I want live data, and I'm going to record what I see on the screen, basically. So I've used my exploit to gain access to the device. Okay, so I'm recording stuff now on the device. Okay, record is through. Now, the point again where I get shot or whatever, I'm dead now, flat line. What happens now is the screen will blank, so you see that I am manipulating the device, and hopefully the screen will come back and display data. Come on, yay! I'm there again. Okay, so, okay, so the next thing I could do is basically wait for the device to rickroll me. I can play videos on the device, isn't that neat? Yeah, so this is complete root compromise. I have root on the box and I can do whatever I want. I can display you whatever I want. Okay, let's sum that up and stop that shitty software. So, okay. So, to sum that up a little bit, there's more to come. It is really, really, really a stressful process in getting hands on these devices. If you want to join us, if you want to test devices, get your hands dirty, get your hands on it. The cooperations that we have with hospitals are really, really have promising results. We have seen anesthetic machines that have NT4 as an operating system on them. And there's enabled comm all over the place. Nobody's thinking about security right now, and I think we should change something like this situation. So we need to test these devices. Remember that responsible disclosure really, really is critical in this part. Get your hands dirty and wait for new publications. Stay tuned. Questions? Yeah.
So we've learned over the last 5 or 6 years that responsible disclosure for software companies takes upwards of 2 years, depending on how bad HP are.
Yeah.
How long is a responsible disclosure for a product that realistically will probably never be updated?
Yeah. The thing is that you should draw a line somewhere, okay? So you can't... It depends on the situation, I would say. If you have a medical device that has direct impact on the patient's health, like a medical pump or an ICD or whatever, then you would probably invest more waiting time in hoping they fix it and try to apply more pressure in terms of making publications that do not name the vendor but do generally show the concept, for example. You need to do this on so the decision must be made on in terms of what is the device and how harmful is it? And how? What is the attack? Okay, so if you got a warmable attack like this one would be warmable, right? You can automate this attack. Then you should step back a little bit and give more time to fix, all right? So this is really, really, really not easy.
How difficult is to analyze and debug these devices? I mean, do you have to resort to hardware debugging, JTAG, or it's more?
Sometimes, yes, it depends. As I said, the devices are really, really different. Sometimes they are using just an embedded system with Linux on it, so you can get your hands dirty there pretty easily. But sometimes they implement their own kernel, their own schedulers, their own processes, and this gets harder. So you have to do a lot of research and a lot of reverse engineering to understand how the device works.
Yep, thanks.
So thank you, Florian. And now we continue with Stefan Fiebeck's talk.
Thank you very much.